Hello, this is Scott Price. You're listening to Radio Free World here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Right now I'm joined with Chad Johnson, who is an international organizer for the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And he's also an organizer with the local 1733 union in Memphis, Tennessee. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Chad.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yes.
Glad always to reach out to our friends to the north.
Well, very happy to that you gave your time here to talk a bit about the right now the labor issue in Memphis, Tennessee. So maybe if you could just give a background.
Sure.
to the current situation in Memphis.
Well, I'll go a little bit further for your listeners who may not know, of course. AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, Local 1733, was founded in the late 60s in Memphis. And this is the local that was first representing sanitation workers when they went on strike in 1968. And it was during the planned second march for the rights of sanitation workers to have a union and be recognized by the city, in which Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel. So we are that. I have the privilege of working for that historic local, that was a incredible shift in labor and race relations in the United States. And so, we fast forward to where we are today. Unfortunately, there are some echoes of that unfortunate past being played out today. There are 13 unions that represent workers who work for the city of Memphis. And of those, the biggest are, of course, the fire department here, which the International Association of Firefighters represents, the Memphis Police Department, which is represented by the Memphis Police Association. AFSCME Local 1733 represents sanitation, public works, the city clerks, community enhancement, code enforcement, a lot of the small departments that do different work for the city, and then the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, represents other workers in general services, some mechanics and the like. What we found ourselves in was earlier this year, in 2011, all the city unions sat down with the city to negotiate our next two-year contracts, labor agreements. This process has been going on since the 70s for everyone, since the late 60s for AFSCME in particular, but since the mid-70s, 1977, 78, for all the unions in the city. We sat down. The city, of course, with the economy being in its state, was having some difficulty on the budget. So we sat down in good faith with the administration to discuss, okay, what was needed in this negotiation period from city workers to minimize pain for everyone and to make sure the city stood on a good financial footing. What was presented to us by the city was that our members would have to take a zero increase, so no cost of living increase, no sort of wage increases at all. And for many of our members at AFSCME, this would be the fifth year that they have not seen an increase in wages at all, not even a cost of living increase. On top of that, absorbing the increase in health care premiums, and on the high end, that could be as high as a 20% increase over the last year. So that, still translate into a net cut for most of our members. But we agreed to it given the financial situation in the city, and we had signed agreements with the city and all 13 unions in April of 2011. And then it was in May of 2011. The ink was barely dry on the agreements, that the city administration and several members of the city council put forth a budget that cut 125 jobs from the city, plus it was originally a 12-day clawback of paid holidays, or an equivalent 4.6% wage cut. And that was the tip of the iceberg, actually. And so, unfortunately, several members of the city council and members of the administration attempted to get the city unions to agree to this new, basically to nullify our MOUs, our agreements that were signed a month earlier. And of course, our position was, well, no, I mean, we came to the table in good faith. We negotiated in good faith. We asked what was the city's financial situation at that time, what was necessary. We had an agreement. We had a signed agreement. And to come after the fact to demand further cuts, when, again, most of our members have not seen a wage increase in 5 years, they've seen their health care premium costs, their out-of-pocket costs increase almost double-digit for the last four every year, that to come after the fact and demand wage cuts, further wage cuts, or unpaid holidays or furloughs, our position was, no, we have a signed agreement. The city said, well, we're going to do it anyway. And they did do it anyway. They instituted a 4.6% across-the-board wage cut that went into effect August 5th for all city employees. And in light of that, because it turned out that the paid holidays were enshrined by a city ordinance, and the city council did not, by a vote, nullify that ordinance. So that original furlough plan that the mayor and the administration put forward could not work, because it was illegal. So they went ahead and then just went straight for a 4.6% cut by changing the budget. As a part of this, believe it or not, we had several city council members also put in a plan to privatize the sanitation department. One city council member, Reed Hedgepath, even going so far as to say that, he wasn't born in 1968. He said he had a black roommate in college, so these issues don't really matter to him. attacking the history and then the reality, too, because the sanitation department in Memphis is funded by a solid waste fee that all citizens who receive utilities pay. So it's a self-funded department. But still there's a question about all the other services that are provided to citizens, and to see this level of cut, even after we came to an agreement a month prior, we felt the city was not negotiating good faith. So all 13 unions joined together in a lawsuit, a federal lawsuit, against the city and the administration on grounds of denial of our due process rights. What was passed in the city of Memphis in the mid-70s was an impasse ordinance. It's basically a structure by which if the city and a union cannot come to an agreement, it goes before a committee of the city council, then before the full city council. Because during the mid-70s, there was a strike of city workers, including fire and police, because they were having a similar problem that the sanitation workers had gone through in 68 in not having their union representation recognized by the city. So a referendum, actually, it came to the citizens of Memphis to amend the city charter to create this impasse process. And so by the city not allowing us to go through that impasse process, not negotiating good faith, signing an agreement and then violating it immediately after it was signed, we felt denied us our due process rights. So we filed in federal court, and we filed an injunction against the 4.6% to be cut. And unfortunately, the city's initial response has been that because there is no collective bargaining law in the state of Tennessee, that they don't have to recognize our memorandums of understanding or the negotiation process. And again, a process that is almost 40 years old. The city administration is taking the position they don't have to. So we've also collectively filed an injunction against the city to set aside the 4.6% pay cut that they're taking so that when we're victorious in court, that money will be available to immediately pay back to the workers who are affected. Because unfortunately, this city council in particular and this administration went through a similar public fight that they lost against the city school system, in which they declared they no longer had to pay for the city schools, lost that fight, but didn't have the money on hand. So it's a little bit of robbing Peter to pay Paul, in which they're, some of the money they're taking is going directly to the money they're paying the Memphis City Schools due to their earlier bad decisions.
Now, kind of going back about this whole issue. I mean, you talked about the one who was the counselor you mentioned.
Oh, his name is Reed Hedgepeth.
Hedgepeth.
A hedge shrubbery, and then path, not path as in a walkway, but path with an E, Peth, Hedgepeth. He's a young, well-connected man. I believe he is a relation through marriage to the head of FedEx, the shipping company.
Yeah. Kind of on those lines, I was also reading that because you talked about the history of the labor organizations in Memphis and their connections to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
And the civil rights movement. The movement to expand democracy in America. I was also reading that, as you kind of touched on, you know, while, you know, this isn't 1968, you know, it's the line coming from the one Reed, the counselor there, but also that saying that, also read that they said that, kind of paraphrasing, but basically, you know, this privatization is almost what Obama and Martin Luther King kind of fought for. There was almost I read that they almost tried to spin it on its head, in a sense.
What the administration, the mayor's office, tried to present was that by privatizing, I don't know if you've had this issue throughout Canada, a new privatization effort has come about called managed competition. It's in which basically you take a municipal department, a government department, and you treat it like it's a private company. And then you make it bid against other private companies for doing that work. Now, that has worked some places, and actually, you know, it has worked well in some places. But, you know, we're in a situation here where especially the sanitation department, has been fundamentally underfunded in equipment for decades. Just this morning, I got several phone calls from members who work for sanitation who their truck froze because the transmission fluid fell out of it mid-route. And a tacit admission from the director of the division that they haven't been spending money to upgrade equipment, possibly in anticipation of a privatization effort. Also, there's been undermining in manpower. The division has not been hiring full-time employees to replace those who leave. Instead, they've been hiring permanent part-timers that aren't allowed to work full-time hours and don't receive any benefits. So there's been an underdevelopment of this unit of the city, and I try to remind people that the history of Memphis is such that during the mid to late 19th century, the city was abandoned by its European American residents due to the yellow fever epidemic. This, you know, we sit on the Mississippi River. This is, you know, for the most part, basically swampland that's been reclaimed. And so one of the reasons why the sanitation department has existed the way it has and with such extensive services is because of that history of the issue of the public health. And another issue that's been brought up is that the claim that the sanitation department has not been working to peak efficiency. And we've continually brought up, well, it's an issue of not having the right equipment, not having the right training, and having a frank discussion with the citizenry that the level of service they're receiving does not necessarily match the amount of money that goes into the system. And if there's a discussion about reducing the cost of the sanitation department, like I said, even though it makes money for the city, because it's funded solely now by a separate solid waste fee the citizens pay, and I have to remind, let people know that fiscal year 2010, over $1 million that was left over from the solid waste fee was deposited into the general fund of the city, because sanitation did all of its work and had $1 million left over to deposit into the general fund. So again, this department makes money for the city, but for some reason there is a rush to privatize. And even in the local press, I don't know if you ran across this article, the local paper hired a freelance, impartial, journalist to do a comparative piece on the region on sanitation departments. And what's been going on in the states as well is that a lot of municipalities over the last 15 years have been on this privatization sort of fad. And what they found out in this hard economic times is that privatization has been costing them more money. And this is what this freelance journalist wrote up for the Commercial Appeal here, that actually for a municipality above 22,000 residents, it actually makes sense to keep it in-house because you have far more flexibility, it's cheaper overall, and then he barely touched on the issues of eroding the tax base, because every time you privatize, you know, that's money you're taking out of your local economy and shipping that somewhere else. But just on the merits of whether or not it costs or saves money, it actually saves money to keep these services in-house. Now, this is something that has not moved the group of city council members, nor has it moved the administration to reconsider this. But that's where we stand today.
Talking more about this issue with privatization, definitely that has been coming more to the front, at least that kind of rhetoric, with definitely with the Tea Party movement, and now with the Republican nominations kind of in full swing, you definitely hear that kind of rhetoric and that kind of talk going around. And potentially, you know, some people are saying Obama's got a good chance that he might lose. In the future, what are the prospects for the future? I mean, is it really just an uphill battle against this kind of ideology, the free market ideology?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it will be a challenge. There is very little doubt that privatization, depending on the outcome, we have municipal elections coming up this October for the mayor and all the city council seats. And only a few of those city council members who head up on privatization will actually have an opponent in this false election, unfortunately. We're fairly certain the issue of privatization will come back. But even, you know, beyond ideology, I mean, the state of Arizona, in a very public way, ridiculed its previous privatization plans. It discovered, and Arizona's a well-known conservative state, they discovered, you know, just again, dollars for dollars, they were spending 20 to 30% more on the private contracts than keeping that work back in-house. And, you know, we remind people that, you know, especially municipalities for public works, that when you privatize something and then you discover that it's not working, it then costs you more to bring it back in-house again. So it can be a vicious cycle. When, again, the decent oversight, making sure that you have capital investments in equipment, are all you need to run a smooth, efficient operation.
Thank you so much, Chad, for coming in and doing the interview.
Absolutely. And people can keep abreast. check out AFSCME Local 1733.org, AFSCME.org, AFSCME.org, and also I have to plug our own radio show. We're on AM990.com every Saturday Central Standard Time from 3 to 5 p.m. It's a call-in show, too.